Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is Friday, July 24th, 1998. In the Creekside room this morning is Ana Maria Pineda. Session number is 98-8 and is titled The Hispanic Celebration of Good Friday. Let's listen in.
Just for those that I haven't had a chance to introduce myself to you, I'm Ana Maria Pineda. I've been here 2 weeks now in Holden Village. I teach at Santa Clara University. Born in El Salvador, Central America, and I came to the States when I was 2 years old and grew up in the wonderful Latino neighborhood of San Francisco called The Mission or La Misión, which is a great, vibrant place. There's never a dull moment. It reminded me of last night's celebration. You know, there's always partying in the streets. You know, there's always activity in the streets, of one kind or another. But today what we're going to look at is the whole celebration of Good Friday, but not just the celebration of the day, but its significance in the life of Hispanic peoples and in the communities of Latin America. What I am going to attempt to do is, first of all, share a variety of experiences of the significance of the crucified Christ or the celebration of Good Friday in our lives. And then talk about how it's expressed today, give you some examples. And I have a video that I will introduce for that purpose. And then give some reflections on the significance, gathering up what I say earlier, and then also what is seen in the film or in the video. And it's possible that we may have a little song or two at the very end of our session. My other part of this gathering this morning is also moving slowly, the guerreros, so they may. And my friend Lourdes, who's been here with me this week, will also take part in the sharing at the very beginning. We have a saying in Spanish of we do things together, like in community. So we share lots of what we do together. So it's en conjunto, together. En conjunto. So we talk today about doing theology en conjunto, pastoral de conjunto, writing en conjunto, sessions en conjunto. So this is going to be one of those sessions. Let me just start out by sharing with you my own experience. Probably one that I didn't think much about until later when I was older, but I remember growing up in the mission, when Good Friday came around, there were these practices at home that were part of the Good Friday preparation and celebration, but I never thought that anyone else did anything different because it was happening at home, so it must be happening throughout the neighborhoods of the world. And that was that as soon as 12 o'clock came along, my mother would have prepared us to understand that today was Good Friday. Today was the day when Jesus gave his life for us. And that in way of gratitude and also in solidarity, although I didn't know that word solidarity, but that was what it meant. And in a way of accompanying that we too would assume some practices at home because this was a very important and significant day. And in some ways, it was that Jesus should not be left alone in the suffering. So my mother would say, well, today we make little sacrifices. So the things that we enjoy, like listening to music, the house will be silent between 12 and 3, because those are the traditional 3 hours. So no playing of music. And we assumed almost a very quiet posture in the home. If you can think of four kids running around, usually, and two adults, but this was what we did. And she said, anything that you can think of today that would be a little sacrifice, if you know, to give up something or to do something that would somehow make this experience of Good Friday alive, I would encourage you to do that. And that was just part of what we did on Good Friday. And then in our home parish, St. Peter's, which is a very beloved parish, I said this earlier, but it probably is fine to repeat it. At the very entrance of the church, which is actually the back of the church, but as you come into the church, on the back wall, there's a very large, full-size figure of the crucified Christ. And it's very customary in the community, and no one ever told us that this was a practice, that this was something we should do. It was just done. People would come in of the Latino community and would always go to the crucifix and kiss the tip of their fingers and then lay it on the feet of Jesus, on the tip of the feet and on the nail that protrudes from those feet. And children were encouraged to do the same thing. And if they couldn't reach, then the parents would lift them up in order for you to do that. And old people, young people, teenagers. But that was customary. And you don't see anyone saying, you should do it. It's just done. And the children are taught to do it. And then as you leave the church, you go up and do the same thing. You repeat this action. I just gave a course prior to coming here to a group of young Hispanic men and women in the area of, I was in Atlanta, and I was teaching popular religiosity. And while I've been here, I've been receiving papers in the mail, work due, like urgent, overnight delivery, express mail. But yesterday, I took some time to start reading some of these pieces of work, and I came across this one that I'm going to take the liberty of sharing. I don't think he would mind, because I thought it was very interesting that my experience has not been different than others growing up, even in Latin America. So I'm going to read part of it to you. And this young man was Catholic and now is Protestant of a Pentecostal tradition. And so he's, in one way, revisiting again his own roots in popular religiosity. And he talks about the experience of Good Friday in Ecuador, South America. Winter meant copious rains in the suburbs where only dusty roads became muddy. During these processions, our shoes and clothing would get very muddy, but we didn't mind. It was part of the ritual experience, sacrifice. It was about being one in travail and suffering with the crucified. This procession would lead us to the ermita, or church, which was a shrine for many visitors to visit while in feast. Thousands would come from all over Ecuador who had some type of contact with the ermita. The procession had to do with Jesus carrying the cross to church. The faithful followed Christ with candles in their hands. The candles would cry, and you would feel them burning your fingers as you walked with it. There was a vicarious sensation connected with Jesus' suffering. You would feel it in your hand no matter who you were. People did not have any candle holders, only their bare hands. It was very emotional to see Jesus carrying the cross in a rainy day with hundreds following him to Calvary. It was a Via Dolorosa scene that would lead to Golgotha. Once in church, a short communion mass would start. The lines would be longer to touch the huge statue of a dying Jesus hanging on a cross behind the altar. Jesus was suspended from his cross in agony, crying to his Father, "Why hast thou forsaken me?" The altar had a stairway where people could enter through a door to reach from behind the altar to touch the feet of Jesus. Then you would wait till you got to the top of the stair where this huge statue of Jesus bleeding on the cross was waiting with healing and mercy to hear your prayer and request. The message was of mercy and of identification with Jesus' suffering. He died for our sins, was my thought, and what I had been taught. People would touch the feet of the statue, but the feet were protected by a transparent screen. People would rub and anoint the screen. It was a moment of sacred communion, where Jesus' presence was near, and out of reverence, you would not touch the feet behind the screen. Some would. I know I did. Jesus was bleeding and dying, with sores on his feet and large nails piercing them. There would be so much awe and reverence from being near Jesus' feet. This is where the passion of petition began. As a young child, my father, who was strong enough to carry me, would lift me up so that I too could touch the feet of Jesus or the screen. My father would pray for me and for his family there at that moment of rapture. We would ask for success in our hard work and good grades in school, etc., etc. Again, I would have to say it was very emotional. This happened once a year. I lived in Ecuador till I was 8 years old. So he is now in his mid-30s. And when he came to this country, he lost that custom because where he moved, he was not surrounded by a Hispanic community. But as a child of 8 years old, he vividly, as you can see, still remembers the experience and is still nourished and enlivened by that experience. So it struck me that the experience I had in St. Peter's Parish in San Francisco, California, in the mission, in many ways, is very similar. The difference that in our church, there was no screen to protect the feet of the crucified Jesus. So much so that today, from the rubbings and the touching, the feet have been worn down and the nail has almost disappeared. And it still remains and the custom still continues. So let me ask Lourdes to share with us an experience that she has had in Peru, where she lived and worked for 11 years with an indigenous population. So what I shared with you was a USA Hispanic experience, a South American, Latin American experience, and this is a slightly different one.
The people that I had the privilege of living and working with in Peru lived in the Altiplano of the Andes by Lake Titicaca, and the culture is called Aymara culture, and it's an indigenous culture, an extremely oppressed culture. Over the centuries, in conquest, people have been systematically dispossessed of their land, their opportunities, and that whole experience of being marginated and dispossessed people. Their language is not Spanish, even though many of them speak Spanish that gets along. It's Aymara, just an Indian language of its own nature. It's as similar to Spanish as Japanese is to English, so you can imagine. And since the time of the conquest, of course, they had been drawn into Christianity, although their religious roots really come from the deep, deep trust of the earth, just giving them all their plunder. And so I need to jump ahead, usually beyond Good Friday for a moment, into the month of May, where there is the celebration of the cross on May 3rd. And for the people in the area in which I lived, that was a very, very important celebration. It was both religious and cultural and familial. And one family each year would take it upon themselves to be like the organizers for the community celebration of the following year. And on Good Friday, we would meet in the skirts of a hill called Chimawi. And anybody from all the surrounding communities would come there. And this particular family would carry a cross, a wooden cross, that would be traditionally passed on from each family year to year. And they kept that cross in their home with great respect and great devotion throughout the year. But they would bring it to the Good Friday celebration. And we'd meet kind of in a little lump on the hill. And once the community was gathered, after they watered the animals and put them out to pasture and pulled the water from the wells and had the kids taking care of the sheep and all of those things done, very easy time of keeping track of time. Usually a lay leader would begin the ceremony for us and would always begin with a rite of reconciliation, where people would be called to remember their offenses to one another, and we'd go around the home. Every single person would encounter each other, and with kind of an embrace or handshake, ask pardon and give pardon to every single person, so the ceremony always began in that sense of being right with one another. Then there would be a blessing of the land with water and with incense and prayers. And then we would begin climbing the hill, and we would go at like stations, you know, it pauses at different points up the hill. And the hill was rocky and kind of thorny at that time of year because, of course, it's going into late harvest time here. And the women would all be dressed in black, as in mourning. And we would read the Passion in Aymara in a dramatic way. So different people would take the place of the voices of Jesus, the narrator, Pilate, all of those different voices. And we, as we would climb the hill, which is not that much, about going up to the chalets here, we would sing in Aymara different songs. One that comes to mind goes like this. Christon vilotandi alla tatanwa upakes pireha alla tatanwa. And basically it's the blood of Jesus has come to us and has been our mercy. And so we would sing verses of that and we'd stop, read a section of the Passion, move on, read a section of the Passion, move on, read a section of the Passion. Unfortunately, we have the scripture in Aymara, and so with people who can read, do the reading here. And then once we got to the top of the hill, then it would be the final part of the Passion. And it is very, very solemn and very reflective type of gathering. And then again, there would be the use of incense to bless the top. There was a little, kind of like a little covering type of shrine. I had a little rustic altar in it. And the area would be blessed with incense and water. And then the people would be invited to come and kiss the crucifix, kiss the feet of Jesus. And it was so, so moving to see these people of dire, dire poverty and humbleness. They would come like in pairs, and they would approach, and they would kneel down and kiss the feet of Jesus. And then and while that was going on, the old Dawiches, which is grandmothers, would have been going around the different parts of the hill, gathering the herbs that were now drying for the season. And by the time we got to the top of the hill, they would have gathered armfuls of these curing herbs, healing herbs, and would place it all around the altar. And that would be blessed as well. And flowers would be up there. And then when the ceremony was over, which was a very quiet ceremony, and blessing and praying for the needs of the people in the time. And it was very beautiful to see the people there praying for the bigger needs of their country, which when I was there was under the under attack from terrorism in Sendero Luminoso, praying for the bigger needs of the country, the children that have been orphaned, the people that have been kicked out of their homes and so forth, and for the bigger needs of the world as they begin to get more global consciousness. And then the herbs and the people would be blessed, and that would be the end of the ceremony. And people would take those herbs back to their homes, and that would be the source of healing for the year. So there was this real blend of respecting the dying that had gone on, and then just getting very living out of it.
So that gives us another indigenous, more indigenous example of the significance of the cross and Good Friday. And all through Latin America, it's absolutely awe-inspiring how it's reenacted in procession. In Guatemala, they have these incredible weeks of reenactment of the different parts of the Passion of Jesus, where they literally carry statues that weigh hundreds of pounds, like on floats on their shoulders. And it's a very special privilege to be able to be a bearer of these huge platforms that have like perhaps a crucified Jesus with the cross. I mean, not a crucified Jesus, but a Jesus in Passion carrying the cross and falling, and the different scenes that we know from scripture so well. What I'm going to show you now is a video. It's homemade. It's made by a group of people in San Jose, California. It's a parish called Sacred Heart Parish. Sacred Heart was initially an Italian neighborhood, many, many years ago. But over the years, it has become a home for many Hispanics and Latinos, some who have been born and raised in this country, and some who have come to this country. And every Good Friday, they reenact the Passion. And this day is in preparation months before. Let me just tell you a little bit about the preparation that the parish undertakes, and then I will show you like 5 minutes of the video, and then try and unpack it a bit. Starting in September, the parish comes together, and it's an open invitation, and they already know that this is to become involved in the preparation of Good Friday. So everyone is invited, and they select the different roles. If you want to be Mary, if you want to be the apostles, the soldiers, so forth and so forth. The only part that is not chosen on the spot is that of Jesus. That is chosen by lot. So you put your name in, and your name is drawn. And if it's drawn, you feel that for this year, it is your honor and your privilege and your responsibility to bear in your body, if you will, the passion and the suffering of Jesus on behalf of the community, and to reenact this on Good Friday. And so it's not just a preparation that takes place in terms of learning your lines, it's a preparation of disposition so that you try and understand what the Passion was all about, not only in the time of Jesus, but what it can be today. What is the suffering of Jesus that still is very present and alive in our world and in our society? And in their neighborhood, what are the signs of suffering and passion and dying? And this is all, it's a spiritual preparation that takes place. And then on Good Friday, all the people involved in the reenactment take it throughout their neighborhoods. It's about 2 hours long, and they walk the streets of their neighborhoods. So in the short part of the video, you'll see the part where Jesus has now taken to the streets. They start in the church and then go out into the streets, and he's carrying his cross, and he is surrounded by soldiers who are mocking him and whipping him as he tries to carry the cross through the streets of the neighborhood. And just to bring it to your attention, it might be interesting to see the kind of people that accompany this Good Friday experience, the people of the neighborhood, the people who aren't of the neighborhood, the people who aren't even Hispanic, that come and partake in this celebration every year. There's some sound, the sound, what you'll hear is the mocking of the soldiers, and they're kind of saying, well, if you really are the Son of God, why don't you do something along those lines? So even if you don't understand Spanish, you'll understand what's happening.
San Jose,
California, Sacred Heart Parish. You see the church people in the back? Call your followers to come and help you if you really are the Jesus of Christ. Thank you.
And he's a parishioner.
Is that as one of the stations? Or because
no,
this is
one of the falls.
One of the falls.
Yeah.
They're just enacting the whole story.
Yeah. And then you see the other... San Antonio, Texas, at San Fernando Cathedral. And the reason it's partly famous is because Father Virgil Elizondo had been the pastor there and has really developed a full-fledged reenactment of Good Friday that takes up the whole downtown of San Fernando area, or the San Antonio area where the parish is. But what perhaps might be learn about this, just in terms of the, what we saw in the video, it is that on Good Friday, it brings together not only the sufferings of Jesus, as in the past, but the sufferings of contemporary men and women in the present. In this parish, what they do is they single out moments of pain and of suffering and of loss for the community members, for families in the community that have occurred during the year. And at the different moments that where they stop, or combining like a station and the way of the cross with the Good Friday celebration, they will remember like the loss of the life of young people in violence and gangs and other kinds of abuse, domestic abuse, single mothers' challenge and struggles, victims of AIDS, the children of families in the community who have health problems that are life-threatening. In that particular community, it's not a rich community. So you think about unemployment, you think about poor housing, you think about lack of child care and the struggles of families to provide their families with what they need and at the same time try to take care of their children in the way that all parents would want to. but sometimes can't because they're challenged in terms of having to put food on the table every day. The other kinds of injustices that occur, even within school systems, the ignorance of children's needs, the poor educational facilities that are provided in some neighborhoods as opposed to others. The whole question of the treatment of immigrants in this country, the laws that are on the books that even take away the rights to health for those who come in, documented or undocumented, who endanger the lives of children. We have some terrible horror stories that could be told, I'm sure that you already know. But even families who refuse to take their children to health services, not because they don't need them, but because their situation has been so endangered by the hostility toward immigrants in this country that they're afraid to. They don't even know where the laws are at this moment. If they do this, will they endanger their stay here in this country? So during Good Friday, all these realities come together. And let me just share a quote with you from a writing by Roberto Goizueta, who is a Cuban-American, one of our Hispanic theologians. And he wrote a book called Caminemos con Jesús, Let Us Walk with Jesus. The whole idea of accompaniment in the suffering of Jesus, but not just in the pain of going through the moment of death, but accompany Jesus in the doing, in the making of justice, in the bringing of justice. Because if you look at it, the death of Jesus was to bring life, was to bring salvation. And what does life mean? How many faces can life have? How many ways can salvation be expressed? And it's not just an emotional outpouring. It has to be a constructing of justice, a constructing of a new world order, a constructing of better life conditions for people. So what he says is this. Ours is a Jesus who bleeds, which is to say, a Jesus made of flesh and blood like us. The blood on his face, on his side, hands, and feet are the signs of his humanity. And what it becomes is a sign of our humanity. So when we look at this way of reenacting the Good Friday, it's not just a presentation. It's not living, as I said before, the passion of Jesus, which took place 2,000 years ago, or over 2,000 years ago. It is the sufferings which afflict us today. And when we think about this, what we realize is that the whole theology of the incarnation is very present in the Hispanic community. There is the understanding that God is more than anything we could ever understand, the transcendence of God. But there's also the powerful understanding and consolation that there is the immanence of God's presence with us, that God isn't just alive in Scripture, as it happened so many thousands of years ago, but he is also alive today, and he's alive in the suffering of men and women that we don't even know. There was a church document that was put out by the Latin American bishops in Puebla, Mexico. And there was I don't have the document with me, so I'm just going to kind of paraphrase it. But there was a whole wonderful section, very moving, but very challenging, that said, the face of Jesus is seen in the face of today's suffering people, in the face of children, in the face of workers, in the face of those who are marginalized, in the face of those who work to provide for their families, in the face of those who are jailed unjustly, in the face of those who are treated poorly. There's a whole paragraph that begins to make for us the presence of Jesus today in our world, and not just in a locked past. It has to be seen in our contemporary moment. The other very powerful significance of the Good Friday and the devotion to the cross is that it's not only a devotion of the person or of the individual, it is a passion of the community. last night we had this service around the cross. Well, one of the things that is very important to consider is it's the individual who's expressing whatever they're moved to express, but it's the power of the community that accompanies. And our sufferings aren't meant to be isolated sufferings just for the sake of suffering. Our sufferings are meant to be in community for the restoration of humanity, for the restoration of Jesus, for the restoration of a resurrection. And let me just end my part by saying, one of the challenges for us, perhaps who are not Hispanic, is to understand a couple of things. One is that the celebration and the importance of Good Friday and the cross of Jesus and the crucifixion of Jesus is not just the act of suffering. There is also, in that moment of suffering, the act of hope. Hispanics don't have this devotion because they want to suffer. Hispanics have this devotion because they know there is suffering, but they also realize that there is hope, and the hope is in the fact that Jesus died and rose again. Jesus died and rose again, and that this act can continue today. Jesus dies, but we can help in the resurrection. Lastly, the suffering is not for the sake of suffering, as I've said, because there's also a way of protest, of making, constructing a new society. And so there's music in our world, music in our community that expresses that love for the struggle, that hope for the struggle, the will to undertake that struggle. And there are many songs that have been written which would be called protest songs, because it shows that this is the way we live the passion. We live the passion with a will to struggle, with a will to make life better, with a will to reconstruct and to have moments of resurrection accompany the moments of suffering as well. Carmen is going to accompany us with a few ending songs, but while she's getting her guitar, what I'd like you to consider is not everyone celebrates Good Friday in the same way, but perhaps in which ways can we begin or continue a practice of making this crucified Jesus more conscious in our everyday world, in the different moments of life that accompany us. How can we see the suffering of Jesus in what surrounds us? And how can we participate not only in that suffering, so that the suffering of our brothers and sisters become our suffering, become part of our struggle, but also become part of our accompanying in the resurrection, in the process of the resurrection?
I would just like to know kind of what, in the Hispanic community, what the relationship is to Easter, because I know in like Protestantism, you know, it's the glory, you know, it's celebrating the glorified Jesus, not the suffering Jesus, and to the point where I think we all can think of, you know, Easter experiences that have been totally ridiculous and just, you know, out of control, stupid things that people have done in this glorification, and not really, you know, taking upon ourselves the aspect of the suffering. So in some way, having no claim to that glory. So, but in the Hispanic community,
where does it come together?
Yeah, or do you celebrate Easter at all?
We celebrate Easter, but Good Friday is the day. Mm-hmm. And that's why I was saying what I did at the end, that some people say, well, it's just suffering. No, it's not just suffering. There's suffering because there's hope. Mm-hmm. And we know because Jesus rose from the dead. And it's like already understood in the celebration of Good Friday. And on the other hand, the other reality is that we're not just going to celebrate glory of resurrection, when we're celebrating or living the struggle.
Do you celebrate Easter, though?
We do celebrate Easter, but it's not the favorite feast of the year, quite honestly. The churches will be filled on Good Friday. They won't be as filled on Easter Sunday. And some of us would say, we've already lived both on Good Friday. You know, and that for us is the moment.
What about the Easter Vigil? Do you celebrate the vigil at all?
Hispanics will participate in the liturgy of the churches year, including Easter, including all kinds of other moments of great significance. But the heart and the passion is felt on Good Friday.
I know that the Aymara people, there's practically nothing on Easter Sunday. In the churches, you know, like in the churches, there will be people I work with, the people in the countryside, which is 90% of the people, and they don't live in the towns where the churches are, which is one of the problems with the churches, that the churches still identify with the class, as it were, and there's been a lot of changes in that. But as I was saying, it's the real celebration. The real identification goes with the suffering because that's where they really are. That's where they really are.
Would you say it would be fair to say that you celebrate through the hope of Good Friday every Sunday of the risen Christ?
Yes, but I don't know exactly how else or perhaps to express it. That's true, but for us, the celebration of the year is Good Friday. It's there that you experience it. Victor Turner has written much about the power of processions and says that processions in themselves help you leave and enter into like a liminal space when you have left like this moment of reality and move into the sacred, which is also a moment of reality, but you encounter a relationship with the sacred in the power of procession, in the power of reenacting, so that what happened 2,000 years ago is not 2,000 years ago, it is present to you now, and you enter into that in a way that is so powerful and moving. So even though there are different moments throughout the year that are of importance, Christmas is important, the humanity of Jesus there is celebrated very strongly in the Latino community. Good Friday has to be like a very singular event of the year. But it's not just an event of the year, it's an event that we live like every day.
Is in the video, is there a part when somebody else takes Jesus' cross out?
Yes. Well, the whole video is about 2 hours long. And we didn't see the beginning. It starts in the church community when they reenact the reading of the Passion. So throughout the whole reenactment in the streets of San Jose, you see the different moments.
That's a wonderful thing.
And sometimes you see the children. You literally forget that you're in the streets in the way of San Francisco, of San Jose in 1998. And you're really pulled into as he's going through the streets. And people are moved to tears. It's a real embracing of that moment of suffering, their reality.
2 days ago, you had a video about the death. Remember we were talking about the grief? And all the tourism and the buses. Yeah. Does that happen here? So it doesn't become just people showing up and cameras.
What has happened is that other members of other communities have taken it upon themselves to make that part of their own celebration.
Okay.
So you have people coming from all over the area, not only San Jose, they're coming in from across the bay.
But to participate rather than just watch.
To participate, it's not a watch, they don't watch. The only thing, and you can't even call that watching, what I have observed, not only here, but also in Chicago where the same thing occurs, and that's usually still in the season of winter when there's snow on the ground, and you have the Jesus going through the streets practically barefoot at many times. His choice, the person's choice to do that. What you'll see is people who are just moving about the streets in their daily activities and are pulled in to participate. So they might be standing on the porches of their homes or on the stairs, but they are pulled into being participants. So you almost, it's almost impossible to become a non-participant. In the streets of San Antonio, in the San Fernando Cathedral experience, people are kind of, the traffic is stopped for hours. The streets are blocked, and people are pulled into that celebration.
That's a charismatic event.
Yeah.
So how does it end? What happens at the end?
It ends with the burial of Jesus. That they take, they always have a culminating spot where traditionally they will do this. In Chicago, it was a park in the neighborhood. In San Jose, it's the parking lot of the church. And they built like a Golgotha, where Jesus is then crucified, lifted up on the cross. And one of the very chilling moments is they lay the wood cross on the ground, and you begin to hear the hammering of the nails on the wood and the metal, and that those sounds just kind of cut through the sound of the area, and that's all you hear for a while. And they're not actually doing it to the person, but you hear it. And people are just, you know, filled with this sensation of Jesus is giving up his life. He's going to be being crucified, and it's for us. It's for us, and that's where the hope is. It is for us. And then he did rise from the dead. We don't ignore that he did rise. But the question is, how do we help people rise today, share this resurrection? Yes.
So it seems like the way that most churches, you know, Protestant, what I've experienced all my life, is more celebrating the whole thing as a linear event that happened a long time ago, and this is what happened, versus experiencing the connection of, you know, that we're still connected, and the part that we're at right now is the suffering. We haven't experienced the resurrection yet. Or the creation of something else. Is that?
Well, I don't know the experience of the Protestant church. I mean, that's where, what it, if there's anything I've said that's helpful for your reflection. Dorothy, do you?
Well, for me as a Protestant, I would say that I feel like connection of, you know, each Holy Week of the Passion of Jesus. But that it's, and I have since I was a child, but it's always on a very personal base. It's not a sense that it's about the struggles of the world, and the suffering of other people, and the sufferings of the whole community. You know, it might be about, you know, we sing certain songs, Were You There? And, you know, I go through the feeling level on a personal base, even about my own personal losses. I've seen, you know, friends who have recently experienced the loss of one kind or another who will understand their, you know, the death in that way. But not any sense that, or not a way of celebrating or visualizing or proclaiming to the world that this is not just about, you know, my grandmother's death or my divorce or, you know, something like that, but rather it's about all the suffering of the people.
It goes beyond your suffering.
Yeah, and I think that's what's really powerful here, the tie-in. It also becomes a way, I would think, in which the Christian community is proclaiming to a city in, you know, in great need, here's what we have to offer, you know? Here's the kind of redemption that is taking place through Christ. And that's very...
In many ways, it's a very subversive celebration, because what you're saying is there is suffering, and the suffering is not that of 2,000 years ago.
Right.
It's today.
Right.
I will hear, in many ways, just say that
presentation. But what I've noticed in Latin America, the moment of going back to your question,
the moment of celebrating the resurrection happens at moments of celebrating or remembering people who are present-day martyrs, people who have been killed by the military, people who have died when they were tortured in prison. Oscar Romero, in Peru, we had just series of people who died from injustice by name. And one of the really common ways of doing that was to say, for instance, Oscar Romero, and someone would yell out, Oscar Romero, and the crowd would answer, Presente, he is here. And Jesus, Jesucristo, presente, resucitó, he is here, he has risen. And that has become a real rhythm that I've experienced a lot in America, is that the resurrection, just like the cross, the suffering is now, the resurrection is now. It's in this person who died, and he's here. It's in this person who died, and she's here.
You know, they did that when I wasn't at school in the Americas, but the rest of my family went down, and kids, it was extremely powerful because each person had a little tiny cross, and it had the name of someone who had been murdered, and she had a little five-year-old girl, and they walked across the, you know, they trespassed, and as they trespassed, they put in their cross and said, Presente.
There is a song that's used very much during the Good Friday moving into Easter, which is Resucitó. And the words are, it's repeated over and over again. He arose, he is risen, he is risen. Death, where is your sting? Death, where is your victory? And you just go into the church and the song is just the refrain. It just hits you with incredible power. He is risen, he is risen. Death, where is your sting? Death, where is your victory?
Carmen.
I'm going to ask Carmen and I guess family, I'm not sure, if she's going to give us an experience of like protest songs that have that sense of, you know, we are in a struggle. You might want to explain a little bit, Carmen. Do you want to look at it?
In Latin America, there's a very strong tradition of songs of struggle, and every country has their struggle in one way or another. I don't know if any of you know that many of our countries in Latin America were under military dictatorship for many years. I'm originally from Brazil, and most of my, I mean, since the time I was 16 years old, I never got to vote in Brazil because there was no democracy. So I finally became a U.S. citizen, so I had the pleasure of voting because during my adult life, I'm good. The song I'm going to sing comes from Chile, and there was a strike in Chile with the mining people in the area of Chile, Chile and Ecuador. Chile and Peru, Arauca in Chile. And there's a song called Chacarera.
Aquí donde usted lo ve, los dueños de la tierra, cuando morimos de pobres pasamos la vida en guerra. Somos pobres, somos ricos, nadie sabe lo que somos. Con las penas de mis palos florecieron los aromos. Qué caray, apenas grito, mientras la guinea el potrero, viene el gringo desde el norte, los aquí desde el agujero. Qué caray, apenas grito, y me siento libertario, me cambié la vestimenta por una de presidiario. La tierra tuvo mi abuelo, tuvo mi padre a mi madre, y al hijo que nació de ellos, a mi perro que les madre. Yo defiendo a mis derechos, y no es el derecho de otros, pero qué caray estoy viendo que ya no soy.
Like we don't even know who we are anymore. my parents and my great-grandparents come from this land, and everything that we, the fruit of our labors, go someplace and we don't even know where they go. And the more I work, the more in debt I become. Like, I can't get off. I don't believe you, this, that, you know, I can't get away from this position for more that I work. So that's what the essence of this song is. And there's one phrase also that says, every time I feel like a liberty, feel like freedom, they change my clothes into a presidiario, into somebody who, they send me to jail and change my clothes into a jail person. So that's what this song talks about.
So you're prison for the struggle.
Prison blues.
Do you want to hear the song, the one that was...
Oh, Victor Jara was a singer and songwriter in Chile, and he was very popular during the identity years of the early 60s in Chile. It didn't last very long, because after 3 years in power, the military took over, they bombed the palace, the presidential palace, they assassinated Allende, and during that whole period of confusion, hundreds of people were put inside a football stadium. Those were called the subversive people. As a matter of fact, there were a few Americans in there. And not too long ago, there was a movie that was missing, that's right, that talks about the struggle of a father who was an American citizen, whose son was in Chile and was inside that stadium. And that stadium became a slaughterhouse. All these people in there were slowly killed. And one of them was Victor Jara. And it's a really, really moving story, because his song was also so strong, and he always was a protest singer. And they cut off his fingers, and he's still singing. He still got up on stadium and got, let everybody to sing without hands. He couldn't play guitar. And then they cut off his tongue so that he could sing. And literally, they mutilated him and tortured him until he was gone. It's a horrible, horrible story. And the worst thing about it is, long time, you know, after, we found out that our CIA was involved into training the people who were the torturers, who were the people who killed all the people. It's a fact.
Yeah, it was U.S. backed.
It was U.S. Definitely, yeah, because Allende was a communist government.
So the U.S. got involved in that.
But anyway, he wrote a song that last night, Lourdes and I were trying to remember, and we can't remember these songs. And I feel so sad, because when I was younger, we used to sing those songs all the time. And as I grow older and have children and my daily chores are more taking care of kids than singing, I'm slowly forgetting these songs. But Victor Jara wrote a beautiful song that was based on the Our Father. And it goes something like this. Levantate, mira la montaña. De donde viene el viento, el sol, el agua. Tú que manejas el curso de los ríos.
Tú que sacaste todo lo que te amo.
Tú que sembraste el fuego de mi alma. I say, get up, look at the mountains. We get the air, the water, and the freshness from the mountains. You that has designed the course of all the rivers, you who have sold my soul, right? With love in my soul. And levantate, mírate las manos. And then I can remember more. And get up and look at your hands. Those are the hands that work. Those are the hands that produce everything we have. And then it goes into the art, the Our Father in it. But it's a beautiful song, and it's so sad that we are dying again. I have to run back.
Thank you for coming in. Thank you very much. Stop here because of the time. But that's a wonderful way to end, because what it's saying is, and these are the hands that can make a difference in the world. Mm-hmm. And these are the hands that can make the passion become resurrection. And these are the hands that are needed in order to do that. So the passion of Jesus is not one that's locked up 2,000 years ago. Mm-hmm. It's one that continues. But the resurrection of Jesus also should continue that. And the words that have been more and more popular or that resonate with these experiences of accompaniment. We accompany. But we accompany not just with our our joy or our emotions, but in involving all of who we are with the reality of humanity. So that, in some short way, is Good Friday. On a Good Friday. So thank you very much.